in your speech, you yourself described it as a job interview. And everyone gets nervous in job interviews. I mean, is that the reason that there was chunks missing? And there are two particular chunks on the deficit, on the immigration that people... Did you forget or did you deliberately drop it?
Well, I didn't deliberately drop it. No, look, let me tell you about the way I do these speeches. I write a speech and then I get up and use that as a framework for... giving a sense to people of where I think the country needs to go. And I add bits in. There was quite a lot I added in yesterday that wasn't in the speech, and there's some bits I didn't say. Look, one thing I said very clearly, because we've got big plans in the NHS, which I know we'll come on to, is that we won't borrow a penny to pay for them. So nobody should doubt our seriousness about tackling the deficit.
But in a way, that's perhaps what's so surprising about it, is that in 70 minutes of speaking, you didn't mention deficit once.
Well, I did say, as I say, that we weren't going to borrow more to fund our plans for the NHS. And let me be clear about this. Ed Ball said on Monday, laid out a very clear plan on the deficit. We're going to get the national debt falling. We're going to get the current budget into surplus, and there'll be no plans in our manifesto funded by additional borrowing. So our position couldn't be clearer on the deficit.
The original script referred to a tough new approach. I mean, we're talking about at least £75 billion. There's going to have to be something significant. One wonders what you would be doing to enable how you would get the deficit down.
Well, we've said, we've laid out plans already, whether it's a 50p tax rate or taking the winter allowance away from the wealthiest pensioners, or what Ed Ball said on Monday about child benefit and restricting rises for the first 2 years of the parliament to 1% for child benefit. We've already shown signs of the action that we would take. It's tough and it's difficult, but we've laid out some of those plans. We have a zero-based review looking at all of these issues, which is currently going on. But look, one of the other things that's important about my speech yesterday, which underlies our approach to the deficit, is it is about big reform, not big spending. And it is about saying that whenever we've got a plan to spend extra resources, it's clearly costed, our plans on the NHS.
OK, and we'll come on to the NHS in a second. But when you look at what people care about, they care about the economy and the bit on the deficit was missing. They care about immigration. And you scarcely mentioned immigration.
Well, I did mention immigration. I did talk about...
But it was another bit that you dropped from your speech.
Well, it was one section of the speech, a couple of pages of my speech, which I didn't use. And as I
deliberately
say... No. As I say, look, the way these speeches work, I could just stand there and read out a pre-prepared speech. Now, I've chosen for the last 3 years to do it in a different way because I think people want to hear directly from me. And that's the style that I've chosen, a style that I believe works for me. Now, that there are perils that come with that, obviously. But I think what people got a sense of yesterday was a plan to change our country. A plan to change our country. 10-year goals to say, how do we make our country work for working people again?
How the Conservatives are worried about UKIP. But I wonder whether you're worried about UKIP, because there is evidence, considerable evidence, of Labour voters who have left Labour to vote UKIP. And I wonder if, you know, given some of the things that you didn't touch on, not least immigration, whether perhaps you're not that worried. What's your position on UKIP?
Well, the position is this. You see, this goes to the fundamental question of this election. Why is there such discontent? Why did 45% of people vote to break up our country in Scotland? Why is there discontent in England and Wales and right across the United Kingdom? Fundamentally, it's because I think people believe this country works for a small elite few at the top and doesn't work for most people. And whether it's raising the minimum wage to £8 an hour or building homes again in our country or dealing with the issue of apprenticeships, so we have apprenticeships in this country, or the NHS, what we presented yesterday was a plan to deal with these issues.
Okay, and you went into detail on what you're going to do with the NHS. You talked about, in fact, what you talked about, you say, will effectively mean an extra £2.5 billion in cash. Jeremy Hunt, the Health Secretary, immediately tweeted that actually they put an extra £2.7 billion into the NHS last year, and they weren't even, and that's not even talking about the amount of extra nurses and GPs that you're suggesting you can get.
Well, that's not the way I see it. Look, the truth about this government is that the NHS is sliding backwards. It's sliding backwards in relation to GP access. One in four people can't get to see their GP within a week. It's sliding backwards in terms of nurses. One in two nurses say that they're worried there aren't safe staffing levels in their wards. And what we presented yesterday was a plan to turn that round. And a plan to turn that round funded not by raising taxes on working families, but raising taxes on the highest paid people, or people with homes above £2 million, and also by clamping down on tax avoidance and dealing and raising revenue with the tobacco
companies. Are you going to turn it round by putting an extra $2.5 billion in?
We're going to make a big difference, and I'll tell you
because
why.
Because you'll know that people should say that actually what's required is an extra $30 billion, not $2.5 billion for 1 year.
Those are talked about as the global pressures on the NHS, but look, I'll tell you why this will make a big difference. Because a hospital is only as strong as the services in the community. And what the plan yesterday, what's really important about the plan yesterday, is it says we're going to have the GPs for GP access. We're going to deal with the issue of the elderly not getting the care they need at home and ending up in hospital. We're going to make sure that we have proper nursing care in our hospitals. So this is a plan, and Andy Burnham will be saying more about it today, our Shadow Health Secretary. This is a plan to start to turn around our NHS and deal with the pressures it faces.
Well, if you're dealing with the pressures and this is a service that's going to cost $130 billion by 2020 rather than the $100 billion that it costs now, are you proposing that actually that extra money is going to come from doing things differently, i.e. a reorganisation of the NHS?
Well, we're not proposing a big top-down reorganisation of the NHS because we've seen what happened with that under this government and it's been a disaster.
So how are you going to make the savings?
Well, I think that's what I've tried to explain. You see, part of the problem we face is that the pressures on hospitals, billions of pounds worth of pressures, come from people not being able to see their GP. If you can't treat elderly people at home and you can't make sure they get the care they need in the home, then they end up in hospital, again costing money. And what I think is so important about our plan is it is an integrated plan, not just for physical health, mental health and care for the elderly. And that's what Andy Burnham is laying out today. So,
Can you explain something? Because the NHS funded from central government. You have social care, which is what the merging is talking about, funded from local government. How can you merge those two without reorganising?
Well, because what you do is you get organisations to work much more closely together, pooling budgets, for example, between local authorities, local authority spending on social care and the NHS. You get the NHS. Actually, one of the things I announced yesterday was 5,000 new home care workers. That is the NHS saying, we're going to care about the care of elderly people in our home. We're going to ensure that there is a proper plan for elderly people. We're going to take some responsibility for this. Now, it is tough, but we began by talking about the deficit. And it is precisely because there isn't lots of money to spend that we do need not just to spend more money on the NHS, but to transform the service.
And I think
we announced yesterday is really important.
And are you happy for Labour to be judged on its ability in terms of running the NHS on what has happened in Wales?
I think there are challenges in Wales, but I think if you look at what the authority...
The chairman of the BMA says there's imminent meltdown in the NHS in Wales, which is effectively run by a Labour administration.
Well, the most authoritative study on this, and Carwyn Jones, the First Minister, has said there are challenges, but the most authoritative study on this is the Nuffield Trust study, and it says, pretty much word for word, no one health system in the UK does particularly better than any other. Now, I know David Cameron has sort of dined out on trying to basically have a big attack on Wales.
I'm talking about the chairman of the BMA. Well, Dr. Phil Banfield.
Well, as I say, look...
Bruce Keogh, the medical director of NHS England, says there are concerns.
Yeah, there are concerns. Absolutely there are concerns that need to be dealt with in Wales, as there are right across the United Kingdom. But look, as I also say to you, right across the UK, if you look at what the Nuffield Trust says, no one health system performs particularly better than any other. But
If
I become Prime Minister, I'll be responsible for the NHS in England. You know, let's actually have a situation where David Cameron accounts for what's happening in the NHS in England, and let's have the argument about how we transform our NHS, because I think so many people across our country think the NHS is going backwards on his watch. They're privatising it, they're fragmenting it, and it is not working. And we're going to turn it around. Mm.
I wonder what you think about when you look at the newspapers, hear what's being said about your speech. In terms of the message that you want to say, and in terms of the message that was received, what are your thoughts on, you have a chance now to say, look, this is what they should be reporting.
What I think people have heard this week is that we have a plan for the country's future so that it doesn't just work for as I say, an elite few at the top. Look, I think that is the fundamental question, not just our country faces, but countries all around the world. We've got the mayor of New York coming to speak to us today at our conference. He ran an election around precisely this issue, the affordability crisis, as he calls it. And that is a country that is an issue that every developed country is wrestling with. And I think that is the big election choice.
And if people take from your speech that actually you will target business and you will be creating, I mean, the new jobs we heard about were thousands in the public sector, that's an okay message to take from your speech?
That wasn't the message of my speech, because I think business and create, as I said in my speech, creating decent, high-paying jobs in the private sector is absolutely fundamental to turning around the cost of living crisis that so many people are facing. In fact, what I talked about was how Britain can lead in the green economy, for example, creating jobs in the private sector, how we can get business involved in creating apprenticeships, which is going to transform people's lives. So absolutely, the whole principle of yesterday's speech, which was about building a better country together, is about everybody playing their part, including business, which is absolutely fundamental to the future of this country.
And will you continue to do speeches without notes?
Absolutely.
Ed Miliband, thank you very much.